You're listening to an event podcast from the Brookings Institution. To get more in-depth analysis and commentary from our scholars, subscribe to the Brookings Cafeteria Podcast on iTunes, download on Stitcher, or find on our website at brookings.edu/BCP.
I want to welcome all of you and those on the webcast to Brookings this morning. I'm sure that most of us can recount our own summer jobs experiences quite fondly, but what I wanted to do was tell a story about what inspired Brookings to come to this topic. Now, last April, more than a year ago, the nation was gripped by the events spurred by the death of Freddie Gray. So was the city of Baltimore. And one of the first things that Mayor Rawlings Blake did was announce an immediate expansion of the Youth Summer Jobs Program. In just a matter of the months, the city would provide 8,000 young adults from the ages of 14 to 21 a summer job, which was up from its commitment of 5,000 prior. Employers in the city stepped up, and private and nonprofit organizations like the Annie A. Casey Foundation and the Bank of America Charitable Foundation, which are featured here today, provided considerable contributions to support the program's expansion. Now, Baltimore's announcement reflects the aspirations of many cities and mayors nationwide. The Summer Jobs Program is seen as an important vehicle to help low-income young adults get good work experience, expand their social and professional networks, and be inspired by a future that is different than life on the streets. Indeed, the need is great. Research by our scholars have shown that nationally and in regions across the country, employment rates for young people have yet to recover since the recession. An estimated 3 million young people are neither in school nor in work. And these disconnected youth are disproportionately African American and Latino, and three-quarters of them are aged 20 to 24. And Freddie Gray was 25 at the time of his death. In the Philadelphia metropolitan area, the number of disconnected youth aged 16 to 24 is a staggering 53,700. And we are going to hear from my good friend, Mayor Michael Nutter, in just a moment. So the rationale for youth summer jobs programs is clear, it's compelling, and a good number of cities organize such programs, especially now that there is a federal grant program to support them. But how effective are summer youth jobs programs? Do they live up to the very high expectations we have on them today? What are the most important elements in terms of performance metrics, program design, funding, staffing, that can make these programs effective in providing true career-enhancing opportunities for our young people? So today, my colleague Martha Ross and Richard Cazes, who is a non-resident senior fellow with Brookings, have released a new paper that answers these important, timely, and rather practical questions. Martha will share her findings shortly, and Richard will host a conversation with our panelists to discuss their experience and insights in ensuring that summer jobs live up to their promise. Now, after the panel, we will be taking questions from the audience and from those on the webcast. So those watching today can, you know, send us their questions through the Twitter using the hashtag SummerJobs. Now, before we kick off and begin with the real heart of the program, I did want to thank Allison Gerber and the Annie E. Casey Foundation for joining us today, for supporting this paper and our work overall. And I also want to thank Carrie Sullivan and the Bank of America Foundation for being such passionate leaders in youth employment and for also supporting our work. Now it is my pleasure to hand the reins over to Martha Ross.
Thank you. This has been a very interesting project to work on, and I'm grateful to have had the opportunity. And now with this event, I'm grateful to have the chance to hear from the panelists and from you, the audience, because I have seen this RSVP list, and it is an impressive, knowledgeable group of people. I'd also like to take this moment to acknowledge my co-author, Richard Cazes, who was just a pleasure to work with, and the final paper is much better for his involvement in it. And my last round of thanks before I get to the meat of this is for all the people who spoke with Richard and I and shared their knowledge and their insights, as administrators, as funders, as policy analysts. There are too many to go through right now, and they're listed in the paper, but I just want to highlight a few. Andrew Moore from the National League of Cities, Keisha Bird from CLASP, and Patty Everett from the Summer Jobs Partnership. And then they provided incredibly helpful guidance working based on their work with communities around the country. And Baltimore was also very candid and helpful and upfront, and I'm very grateful to Jason Perkins Cohen, Ernest Dorsey, and Michelle Miles of the Mayor's Office of Employment Development for helping me understand the on-the-ground perspective and answering what I'm sure were naive questions. So now on to the topic at hand. First, a bit about summer jobs programs. What exactly are we talking about? Summer jobs programs typically last 5 to 7 weeks. They are often about 5 hours a day. They serve primarily teens and high school students, but not exclusively. And they are meant to serve young people who otherwise might flounder in the labor market. Wages are typically subsidized, but not always, and young people are often placed in nonprofits and the government, but also the private sector. They can be operated by a variety of organizations, workforce investment boards, human services and employment agencies. These are some of the most common. They're funded by a mix of sources, local, state, federal, philanthropic, corporate. There's no one right mix. There's a lot of variation. Cities and counties, large and small, do these programs. New York City has about 55,000 participants, which yet still doesn't meet demand. Chicago has about 25,000, also not meeting demand. And then you've got much smaller places like Missoula, Montana, and Charlottesville, Virginia, also doing it. This is across the country. Some organizations operate the programs themselves, and some contract it out to nonprofits. So there's a huge amount of variation. And they've gained increasing attention and investment of late, probably dating back to the 2009 stimulus, which provided the first dedicated federal funding for summer jobs in about 15 years, and then also with in response to the reverberations of the events that highlight the need to increase opportunities for young people, especially those of color in distressed communities. And as Richard and I delved into this topic, we used a couple of questions to guide our thinking. First, why do summer jobs matter? This is a fundamental question. I will list some of the reasons why they matter, and then depending on who you talk with, you'll hear different reasons emphasized. First, they improve a young person's future employment prospects. They provide work experience, skill-building opportunities, and a chance to build their networks. By virtue of their age, most young people lack all of these things, but it's also amplified by those of lower socioeconomic status. So in this case, it's serving a workforce development function. They provide constructive activities and promote social behavior. In this case, it's serving as a public safety function by keeping young people busy, quote, off the streets, and preventing them from getting into trouble. These touch on some pretty raw and relevant issues in what's going on in cities and distressed communities today. And embedded in those two, and something I was slow, I think, to realize, was that for many parents, these are incredibly important. They want their kids to be doing something worthwhile and constructive. in time that would otherwise be pretty unstructured, and especially for those who don't have the resources for summer camps or different kinds of enrichment activities, these can be a lifeline. And then lastly, they also provide earnings to low-income families and communities. So in this case, it's serving an income transfer function. What do we know about their impact? Are they actually achieving these goals of improving employment and reducing criminal activity and other problem activity? On this, we know less than we'd like. Until fairly recently, there was little research on youth employment specific to summer jobs programs. But new research on programs in Chicago and New York have found that these programs lead to reduced arrests for violent crimes, they reduced incarceration and mortality, and they improved some academic outcomes. This is obviously validating for supporters of summer jobs programs, but it's hard to make broad generalizations about program effectiveness in different contexts with different program designs unless you have a thicker research and knowledge base. And there are still some missing links. The Chicago study finding reduced violence did not find an impact on school attendance or grade point averages, and the New York City study showing reduced incarceration did not find any impact on later employment and earnings. So there's more to do. There are additional studies based on random assignment underway, and I don't mean to imply that localities are blind to the value of data and evidence building, but it's complicated and expensive to conduct research that can point to causality. And when that's not possible, which is usually, some localities are doing some really interesting work to measure their performance and compare the outcomes of their summer jobs participants to demographically similar young people, typically high school students. And that's showing some promising results, and it shows a commitment to data. Last guiding question. How do you run a high-quality and large summer jobs program? These programs are harder to do well than most people assume. A successful program rests upon a host of logistical and bureaucratic achievements that are usually unseen and unsung. You need to recruit, register, and prepare youth, recruit, register, and prepare work sites, match youth with appropriate work sites, considering youth interests, the employer's skills and age requirements, geography and transportation, run payroll, monitor the program, and ideally provide guidance, coaching, and/or troubleshooting to both the youth and the employers. And then you have to do it at scale. Multiply this by 8,000. Multiply it by 25,000. It just gets more complicated. So Napoleon is quoted talking about the centrality of logistics in military campaigns, and it's a slightly odd comparison, but I'd say the same thing about logistics in summer jobs programs. In this case, you're not talking about supply trains to the Russian front, but you are talking about planning and implementing a complex operation involving multiple actors, multiple locations and facilities, and a huge number of critical details. So, based on a theme that you will hear throughout, although there is less research than we like, there is still a lot of knowledge that can be consolidated and used more effectively. So towards that end, Richard and I tried to distill what we had learned from talking to practitioners and our reading into some core elements of successful programs. And as Amy noted, despite the complexity of these programs and the need to strengthen the evidence base, their underlying logic is pretty compelling, which is A, young people need better connections to the work world, and B, let's put them in the work world. And they're riding a tide of enthusiasm and investment. Cities are doing a lot of interesting, creative things, and maybe we can keep this momentum going to expand and improve these efforts in service of the ultimate goal, which is to help young people successfully transition into adulthood. So These should be characterized as best bets rather than definitive, although they do align closely with other research and assessments on the qualities of good summer jobs programs and youth employment programs. So we divided them into two categories. There's program design, referring to the activities that make up a summer jobs program and the services that the program provides to youth and to employers. And then each of those elements has staffing and organizational implications, which leads us to the second category of how do you do, how do you operate, how do you execute those program design elements. Now here I'm going to give some examples of what different places are doing, and there's simply not time to describe all of what Richard and I learned, and it's also not possible to catalog all of the interesting things going. So rest assured, I know the universe of good stuff that's happening is larger than what I will be talking about. First item is recruiting employers and work sites. You can't have a good summer jobs program without summer jobs. Mayors play a big role here. They're the recruiters in chief. Their control of city jobs and their visibility in the nonprofit and the business worlds is critical, and we'll hear more about this on the panel. Part of this is screening the employers and the work sites to ensure that there's at minimum a job description and a designated supervisor. And increasing private sector slots is a focus for a couple reasons. Government and nonprofits have typically provided the bulk of summer jobs, but their ability to generate more has limits. And if you bring in the private sector, you can provide more career exploration activities and increase the likelihood that some positions will be subsidized. I'm sorry, will be unsubsidized and employer paid, so you can expand the program without overreaching financially. Next, being a good matchmaker. Many cities have explicit tiers within their programs to serve young people of different ages and different skill levels. So, for example, Capital Workforce Partners in Hartford, Connecticut has 4 tiers with service learning for teens aged 14 to 16 at the younger, less experienced end to both subsidized and unsubsidized internships for older youth. And Work Ready Philadelphia is organized into similar tiers. And some cities have tracks or programs specifically designed for more vulnerable youth, such as those involved with the criminal justice system, or those, and the Chicago research was based on a part of their program that was geared towards youth in high violence high schools. There is a lot involved, a lot that you can teach young people about transitioning into the work world. And places are doing this in interesting ways. In terms of work readiness training, there's no standard curriculum or approach. Some use third-party materials, some build their own. In Massachusetts, the Commonwealth Corporation has developed a Signal Success curriculum, which is used in 15 communities around the state. It provides lessons plans, assessments, and technical assistance. MHA Labs in Chicago analyzed thousands of employer appraisals from summer jobs programs to identify a set of 12 core skills most highly correlated with hireability and employer satisfaction. And then they work directly with partners who are operating summer jobs, youth employment programs, to develop assessments and feedback forms and other tools that support these skills. And as Chicago's City of Learning Initiative, summer jobs participants who earn high ratings on all of these 12 skills can earn a, quote, higher up digital badge. There are also work-based learning plans that Boston has been using for years and that we'll hear about probably from one of our panelists because Louisville, Kentucky has adapted it for their own purposes. There's a lot happening in financial capability and financial education, some of which is supported by provisions in the Workforce Investment and the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, and also, a lot of other corporate and foundation initiatives. San Francisco appears to have the most developed and evaluated program, the My Path Savings Program, which includes peer-to-peer education, access to a savings account, development of a savings goal, direct deposit for paychecks, and a savings match. The goal here is to keep young people away from check cashing outlets and down the line keep them away from payday lending and other financial services like that. Supporting youth and supervisors to maximize learning and development. And it's important to emphasize that you're supporting both the youth and the supervisors. It's often harder to focus on the supervisors. But in terms of youth, you've got mentors in Chicago One Summer Plus, job coaches in Louisville. In Boston, there are career specialists. These all provide guidance to young people and positive adult relationships. They troubleshoot. They also work proactively to help young people adjust to work norms, think about their future. On the supervisor side, some of these same people do a lot to orient supervisors to working with teens who they may not have that much experience with. What are realistic expectations? How do you provide useful and constructive feedback? What are typical roadblocks and how do you address it? Lastly, connecting summer jobs programs to other educational youth development and employment initiatives. This six-week dip into paid employment is a huge opportunity, but no one is blind to the fact that its impacts would be multiplied if it was connected to longer-term services and relationships. But the barriers to doing that, the logistical funding, organizational barriers are real. But you do see it happening. So for instance, in San Diego, they are creating winter and spring break externships with the goal of using those to prepare for summer jobs. San Francisco changed to reflect this greater emphasis. They changed their name from Summer Jobs Plus to Youth Jobs Plus. They're encouraging a lot of their nonprofits that run summer jobs programs to stay working with those young people throughout the school year, both pulling from their school year youth into the summer and then feeding their summer participants into the year round. You're going to hear on the panel from an example of this. One of our panelists is in her fourth summer as a summer jobs worker in an organization in which she participated in an after-school program for multiple years beforehand. There's also alignment with career-focused high school programs. In Baltimore, healthcare, career and technical education students are placed in hospitals, jobs related to their field of study, and then what they did last summer was for employers that wanted to hire, keep those young people on throughout the school year, the city continued to subsidize their wages. So that summer job turned into a year-round job. Implementation is the key driver of quality. You may have a beautiful logic model and theory of change, but if you don't have the organization or the staff to carry it out, it doesn't matter. So these are issues relating to, do you have enough staff? Do they have the right training and job descriptions to carry out the program? One program operator described his staff as, quote, a skeleton crew. You need to have, often programs make careful use of seasonal workers to manage surges of work, which is useful, but you have to do additional training for these people every summer. They may or may not have knowledge in working with youth or employment programs. A number of programs do have year-round staff to build and maintain relationships with employers, but those are hard to fund. Secondly, information technology. We heard stories about outdated and inefficient processes, 15-page forms that young people needed to fill out by hand and mail in, job matching processes that involved walking to a file box full of youth applications sorted by zip code to identify likely placements for a given work site, spreadsheets with relevant information that weren't well synced with registration and job matching systems. Creating better information systems can be Herculean, but without them, the core tasks are so painful and so inefficient that many places have decided that it's worth it to push this rock up the hill. To give one example, the San Diego Workforce Partnership custom built a management information system that streamlined their enrollment and their job matching and included a communications function so they could send text messages to their participants, and they dramatically increased their response rate. Lastly, using fairly low-tech tools often, such as sample job descriptions, sample performance assessments, toolkits that are publicly available to help staff work with program supervisors to make this program run well. They bake in quality standards, and they codify the accumulated program wisdom. So, for instance, the workplace learning tool MHA Labs mentioned earlier developed with one of their partners a summer intern growth contract that the intern and the supervisor used at the beginning. Okay, so if you put all this together, what would you find? Here is a proposed vision. The path to employment and economic security for a young person is not always straightforward, especially for young people from low-income and distressed communities. What is the role of a summer jobs program in helping a young person stay on track? It's a valid question. This is a six-week, relatively low-touch intervention, and a lot of the young people that we're concerned about have needs that are more, that require more intensive services. So this vision is designed to provoke dialogue about what's desirable and feasible, and what's the difference between the ideal and what's the difference between what's good enough. Others will improve it, I'm sure. So we said summer jobs should provide a high quality work experience. Then you have to ask, what is a high quality work experience? We take a stab at defining that in the paper. They will also serve as a portal to other educational, youth development, and employment services. These are fully building this out for any given program would be a major effort, especially depending on where they're starting from. But without a goal, you don't know where you're going. We designed that vision to complement our recommendations and make them more concrete. First of all, we need a better measure of success than number of youth served. It's readily described, it's readily measured, it can galvanize support and action, but a headcount does not answer the most important question, which is whether the young people leave the program better prepared than they entered. Now, tracking young people longitudinally over years is, at this point in time, given existing resources, highly unlikely. Oops. Sorry. In most cases. But there are lots of interim, specific, feasible measures that programs can set and be willing to hold themselves accountable. I took this from Louisville. Have as a goal that every participant leaves the program with the name and contact information of an adult who will serve as a professional reference. Measure your progress towards that goal. Measure the participants who improve in their soft skills based on some set of expectations, whether those are designed internally or external, such as the work keys. Measure the attainment of a work readiness credential. Measure the attainment of digital badges. Measure how many young people are from high school, career, and technical education programs who are placed in a summer jobs program related to their field of study. Secondly, as you will have heard in my remarks, there's a theme here about we need to know more. So we need to invest in building knowledge and sharing knowledge. And we can do that in several ways, one of which is in order to track the progress that I just mentioned, programs need better performance management systems. They can't be held hostage to a spreadsheet in one computer that has the data that they need that doesn't talk to the other computer that they will be the other system that they'll be using to report outcomes. It's a big lift, but it's doable and it's vital. We can support learning communities. The Brandeis Center on Youth and Communities did some of this under a grant with the Walmart Foundation, and these, I think, 6 or 8 communities convened in real life and virtually, and they are still networking and learning from each other, although the program has officially ended. Back to implementation, align program staffing and capacity. There is a management article that has the title of "Nobody ever gets credit for fixing a problem that didn't happen." So, by which I mean the difficulty of directing staff away from the day-to-day grind and providing time and space and resources to develop and assess new approaches. It's hard to do. It's hard to do in the public sector, and it's hard to do in the private sector, but it is doable. Deepen and extend services to both young people and employers. So what this means is both time, extending the building links to services that are before and after the summer, and in some cases, deepening the services that happen in the summer, especially for youth who need more support. This can happen with stronger partnerships with nonprofits and other programs. For instance, in Hartford, Connecticut, a service provider, Our Pieces of Pie, estimates that 60% of the youth they served as a contractor in the summer jobs program were youth they already served throughout the year. So they just transitioned those young people into the summer jobs program. They had the existing relationships. They had the existing plan for education and employment, and summer fed into that quite well. Money. there's a couple things in here. By stabilize the funding base, we are referring to the problem that in many cases, program operators don't know their final budget until late spring for a program in which they will be placing youth in late June. This makes long-term planning very difficult. There's not an easy answer, but with better lines of communication between policymakers, philanthropy, program administrators, this can be improved. As I mentioned, programs are increasingly looking to the private sector to support these programs. And lastly, in order to have these programs really come back, the federal government needs to renew its commitment. One study estimated that the number of participants declined by 50 to 90% after the Workforce Investment Act eliminated the standalone provision for summer jobs. So what we're proposing is a competitive grant process, 5 years, $3 to $4 billion total, for both demonstration grants and planning grants for communities to both expand their numbers and ensure that number of youth served is not the only measure they can report on with confidence. There are more details in the report, but the main thrust is that many communities are just not going to be able to do this if there's not federal support. But we need to remember our lessons about the need for more evidence about what works. Thank you. Now we're gonna move to the more interesting portion, which is the panel discussion. It will be moderated by Richard Cazes, who is a non-resident senior fellow here, formerly of Jobs for the Future. Participants include the Honorable Mayor Nutter, the Bank of America President, Charitable Foundation, Carrie Sullivan, a participant in a summer jobs program, a participant in the Marion Barry Summer Youth Employment Program here in the district, Anna Galeas, and the Executive Director of Kentuckiana Works, Michael Gritton. They are all accomplished and interesting people. Their bios are in your handouts, and you can read them at your leisure. So please join us.
Can you all hear me? Good morning. It's nice to see such a big crowd here. First, I want to thank Martha for leading this project, but also for that incredibly rich and brilliant synthesis, really, of an incredible amount of material in the report. You'll have to take the reports home and read them at your leisure, but we're going to dig deeper into a lot of the questions and a lot of the issues that were raised in the report itself. So I want to thank you, Martha. I want to thank the panelists, all of you who have taken time from very busy schedules to come join us today. This is an incredibly knowledgeable, experienced, and expert group that we have up here, and we're happy to have you all here. And I want to thank you, the participants who are in the room, and those of you who are watching on webcast, and know that we know that many people in this room have a huge amount of expertise and experience to bring to these questions. We look forward to question and answer and discussion with you, and we'll turn to that after probing some of these issues with the panel in a discussion format rather than a presentation format. So for the next chunk of time, I'll be moderating this panel discussion on key issues in strengthening summer jobs programs. We have really diverse perspectives here. We have a former mayor. We have someone who has to actually run a summer jobs program. We have someone who wears two hats as both an employer working with youth in summer jobs programs and as a funder of programs that work that are both youth employment summer programs and year-round programs. And we are really thrilled to have Anna with us, who, as Martha said, lives in the District of Columbia, is a senior just about to go to college next year, spent several years as a participant in a program that probably might not have existed without summer youth employees manning the program. Or personing the program. And now Anna has spent 4 years actually being a counselor in the program, which deals with soccer, poetry, and service learning called DC Scores. So we're thrilled to have you here, and Anna will set us straight on like what it's really like to be in one of these programs and what we're really, you know. So that's good. So I want to just make three or four comments before we jump into the questions and my questions to the panel. Martha mentioned Napoleon. I'm going to put Napoleon and pop-up restaurants and pop-up stores into the same sentence. In that running a summer youth jobs program is a little like opening up a pop-up store, right? You got 10 weeks where all of this has to happen, or 5 weeks or whatever, and everything has to come into place at the same time. You got to get the logistics, you got to get the staff, you got to get the materials, you got to get the program. One of those things doesn't come up, you don't open, 5 weeks are gone, and you're done, you're cooked. So the amount of logistical complexity, staffing complexity, timing issues involved each year to get this pop-up summer program up and running at an effective level and an efficient level is, you know, that in and of itself is mind-boggling. We're going to spend some time on that. Second point I wanted to make is that whatever, we will go, we'll talk some about research, we'll talk some about how do we know about effectiveness and what works and what doesn't. But I think this general sense, and Amy said this when she began her comments, that everybody remembers their first summer job and how important it was to them. And everybody who's a parent wants their kid to have a summer job and knows how important it is for them to get into the labor market, to understand what career choices are out there, to think about more coherently about opportunities. So this is a huge opportunity. And it's a huge opportunity, particularly for those young people who find it increasingly difficult to get a toe into the labor market. Right? We know that. So, but I think the other important thing to think about, which we found in talking to people, is this is also a moment where young people actually might listen to adults, because there's a job attached. There's an opportunity attached. So it's a time when you have them and you have their attention and you can talk to them about, you can provide information that you might not be able to provide at other times of the year. You can provide services. You can provide entree portals, as Martha said. So I think that aspect of using summer well is also something that I think is less discussed but really critical. Third point I wanted to make is that while summer jobs programs, their basic outlines are the same, right? It's matching kids to job opportunities. The kinds of innovations that we found in doing the research and that we're going to talk about in the panel make this so the 21st century summer jobs programs, the ones since the stimulus package, the ones how they've developed in the past 7-8 years, it's not your father's summer youth employment program. There's a lot of interesting new directions, and we're going to get into some of that. And finally, the last point I want to make is it's on everyone's mind, and if it isn't now, it certainly will be at the end of the panel, which is that the ambition, the opportunity that we have, the ambition that cities like Philadelphia, Louisville, D.C., and maybe several dozen others around the country have to use this opportunity well, that ambition runs up against serious resource constraints. And that, in effect, is the fact of daily life for people who run and work in summer youth programs. That dissonance is real. We shouldn't gloss over it. It is the fact of life of how they make hard trade-offs and choices about what, new innovations are going to bring in, what kinds of efforts, what kinds of new programs they can bring in, what kind of staff development they can do, what's reasonable to do with employers, all of these issues. What do they do at the local level? What do they do with entrepreneurs in any business or any venture do? They figure out how to add value, how to be useful, how to expand numbers and quality at the same time, and do it all within resource constraints that are, that are killing them. But I don't think we shouldn't downplay these challenges, but we also shouldn't, kind of wallow in them in our conversation. I think we have to kind of balance that. So, that said, we're now turn to the initial questions to the panelists. And I wanted to start with Mayor Nutter. When you were mayor, you were very bullish on summer jobs programs. You made very important to your strategy. Can you talk some about why that was, what you hoped you would get from an aggressive summer jobs program in your city for the community and for the youth who were involved?
Sure. Thanks for the question, Amy. Thank you and the entire team here at Brookings, and certainly for the research, Martha and Richard. I appreciate you firmly, validating what many of us have known for a long, long period of time, which is summer jobs are good for young people. They're good for the economy. They're good for a city, and are a part of, or should be a part of, a larger strategy, which we can talk about some of those parts. I don't usually try to start off disputing or arguing with the moderator, and we won't. But there were a couple of things you mentioned, Richard. You know, I don't think a summer jobs program should be a pop-up. There are a lot of things that we do in government that are not pop-up. Mm-hmm. We pick up trash every day. That's not a pop-up. We provide police services and fire services every day. They're not a pop-up. Water comes out of your faucet every day. It's not a pop-up. We know that school is going to end at a certain point. We know it's going to start at a certain point. Recreation programs are not pop-ups. We have plans in place every year for year-round park and recreation activities. We know we're going to scale them up in the summer. It's not a surprise that suddenly June arrives and kids get out of school and we need to find something else for them to do. It should be a standard part of what the government does. And you have to plan for that, like we plan for everything else. And so we have to really standardize our practice over a period of time that it's not a pop-up. It may happen at a certain point in time, but you know it's coming. Summer should not be a shock to anyone. So it's going to happen whether you want it to or not. So that's the first thing. And then I guess and I've never been on a program where Napoleon was part of the discussion. So that's a new one for me. My first real job was when I was 13 years old out in West Philadelphia. I worked at the neighborhood pharmacy, Snyman's Pharmacy, to get that job. That was like a big thing. It was a well-known institution in the neighborhood. I did dish water ice when I was 8. That may have been in violation of a variety of laws and regulations, but I think the statute's up on that. And except for the 18 months between when I resigned from city council to run for mayor and then became mayor, I have worked since I was 13 years old. So I know that experience very, very well. I know what it did for me. I know what it did for a bunch of other kids in the neighborhood. And I wanted every child in Philadelphia to have certainly that kind of experience, whether they worked at a drugstore or not. But I think the more important point is I looked at our summer jobs and year-round employment as a larger strategy for skills building, public safety of the young people, things going on in the street, the fact that they could earn some money, get some skills, and really start to build, even at 14 years old, freshman year in high school, start to build a resume and a skills base that would lead them from, you know, working when they're 14 to working when they're 15 to working when they're 16 and on, and really build up a rich tradition of a work ethic and an understanding of what the world of work is about. Unless you are, you know, the discoverer of, you know, whatever would be comparable to the pet rock, you know, most of us are going to work. The young people are like, what is that? You can Google that. It was a thing a long, long time ago. So most of us are going to work for a long period of time. So you need to get ready for that. If you don't have examples in your life about that, then it is a part of our adult responsibility to provide that kind of experience. So we'll talk more about it. But, I mean, that's really kind of where I was coming from, and I took it very seriously as mayor of Philadelphia.
Great. Thank you. Michael, I wanted to turn to you next, and you have the responsibility of planning for and delivering and executing on Louisville's summer jobs program.
Right.
And I wanted you to just talk a little bit about what it means to you and to your mayor as well in terms of a strategy for the city.
Well, so I do want to commend Brookings on the report and lifting up this topic, and I want to commend Mayor Nutter. He was the head of the U.S. Conference of Mayors for a year. Summer jobs was one of the major pushes that he was making. Mayors have been making this push for a long time, so we welcome the attention to this subject. And I work for Mayor Greg Fisher in Louisville, and when Mayor Fisher was a brand new mayor in January of 2011, he attended his first U.S. Conference of Mayors meeting, and the very first thing he went to was a breakfast about summer jobs. And we were, at that moment, mayors were learning that the stimulus money in 2009 and 10 that the federal government had given us to put kids to work in the summers of 2009 and 10 was going away. And Mayor Fisher leaned over to me at the table and whispered, well, what does this mean about summer jobs in Louisville? Because it sounds like the federal government isn't going to do this. And I said to him, well, the honest truth is some of the mayors in this room are going to leave and say, I'm just not going to bother doing this because I've got police and fire and EMS and lots of other problems to solve. But some mayors in this room are going to decide, I've got to roll up my sleeves and do this anyway. And he said, well, I want to be in, we've got to do something. This is a subject we can't ignore, right? My mayor ran on lifelong learning, but also on a compassion agenda, and he sees the summer jobs program as something that connects those two things. Yeah. So, and what we know is the research Andy Sum had done and now Paul Harrington at Drexel has documented that there just aren't as many jobs for teenagers as there used to be. And so when you're trying to address whether it's poverty alleviation or whether it's trying to just connect young people who are not involved in the world of work into that world, you immediately come to the opportunity of a summer job program as a way to bridge that gap. So for us, Mayor Fisher is always talking about trying to make sure that we're creating opportunities for every kid so that kids who don't come from affluent backgrounds or don't have the sort of parents that can connect them to these kinds of opportunities can find those opportunities and get to them. And that leads you directly to the kinds of things Martha just outlined. I was realizing why some of these hairs have turned gray when you were outlining all of the things we're trying to do. And I agree with Mayor Nutter, it's not a pop-up restaurant, but when you're running it, it does feel something like that because it's a little like the snake that swallows the mouse. You know it's coming, but all of a sudden there is a bulge that you can't ignore. So, I mean, at a fundamental level, Mayor Fisher is committed to this in the same way Mayor Nutter was in Philadelphia because he knows it gives kids a window into the world of work that they can't get from a K through 12 experience, right? Just what you described, Richard, there are adults that you're listening to because they control your paycheck. They're telling you something about a world that you're not going to learn about in your high school. And to pretend that high schools can do this is just not something they're going to be able to do, right? So number one, they're getting introduced to a whole language and a whole set of behaviors in work that they don't get anyplace else. And if they're coming from an impoverished background, they may not be getting it from their parents, right? And we have to acknowledge that because most of what I learned about soft skills, I learned from watching my dad get up and go to work every day. But many of these kids don't have dads or they don't have parents that are working. So those habits are not being built. Second of all, Mayor Fisher is really excited about this because over time, you want to go from a subsidized job that may be at Metro Parks or maybe at a nonprofit to working at companies like Humana or Kindred Healthcare, right, or GE Appliance Park or Norton Healthcare, these fantastic companies that have stepped up to partner with the mayor in Louisville on this kind of thing so that kids can start to see a future and understand what's possible for them in the economy in Louisville. If they're not ever connected to that kind of experience, that world is completely foreign to them, right? So you're both giving them a window into a world and a language and a set of behaviors that they don't know about. Then you're giving them an idea of a career pathway that they might be able to do. And then we've done research, as Martha indicated, that shows the kids that have participated in our program go on to work at a much higher rate and go on to post-secondary education at a higher rate than similarly situated kids who weren't in the program. Right. So they're doing exactly what you would expect, which is they're realizing, boy, if I want to make this kind of money or work at a company like this, I'm going to have to do more than just slunk along through high school. Right. So that's the fundamental reason why we're in this stuff and why we're excited to be doing it.
Perfect. Thank you. Carrie, you are the president of the Charitable Foundation at Bank of America. And as I said earlier, you're both an employer and a funder, deeply involved in youth employment issues and making choices that's where the foundation wants to put a lot of energy. Can you talk about why that is and how you see summer programs fitting
into this? Sure. And there are a number of reasons, and some have to do with the heart, some have to do with the head and economics and a whole host of things. But and by the way, thank you for this wonderful research because I do think it's very validating and really helps me build my strategy. We have been very engaged with Pathways for Young People for quite some time. And really, during the economic downturn, pulsed up what we were doing. And summer youth employment is something we were engaged in many of our markets across the country because we're in most major metro areas. And one of the things we did was go to the U.S. Conference of Mayors back in 2010 and really said, what can we do? And what really impressed me about the work that was already happening in mayor's offices, they already knew it's not just a summer job. It's connecting young people to soft skills, what to do with that paycheck. You know, there's the financial education is a piece of it. So to my mind, the summer youth employment piece is another learning opportunity that they're paid for. And I say that because young people, and I don't think it matters what the summer job is as long as it's a meaningful opportunity. So we employ people at the bank in our banking centers, and we work with jobs programs throughout the country, but we do a lot of placement with our nonprofit partners. And I have to say, as long as it's meaningful and there's some training for a young person as they go in, so they're not sitting in a room filing, that they're engaged and learning, it's a whole different ballgame. And I can give you a couple of great examples. And this is, I happen to live and work for Bank of America in Boston. And through the Private Industry Council, which is part of the mayor's jobs program that has been in place for a long time in Boston, one of the prerequisites used to be, we really want you to place young people in the banking centers. And we can do that, but we can't hire hundreds of kids in the banking center. There's metrics we have to worry about. But we worked with our partners and really developed a program that leverages a couple of things. One, and this really ties into what you said, there's a large summer camp program that exists in Boston, 75 summer camps, urban camps. There's teens that are unemployed. And how do we connect the dots on those things? And we were able to really provide counselor training during their April vacation. And we recruited young people early for summer jobs. We trained them out at Hill Reservation, which is outside of Boston, but it has ropes courses, and really got kids who were from 26 high schools across the city of Boston together as a team and taught them what it was like to be a role model to other young kids. So at the end of the day, I use this example because these young people earned a paycheck. They created a real positive opportunity for teamwork. They learned all the soft skills. We helped them write their resume. We gave them better money habits. They had CPR training. And summer camps were so much better in the city because of it, because these counselors lived in the neighborhood where the camps were. They knew the kids. They were mentors. I mean, it was just an amazing win. So we certainly hire young people in our banking centers, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But that was just, to me, when you put it all together, is a win-win because young people were helped, teens were helped, the economics of family income were helped. They had something to write on their resume and training. And that to me is when it works. And it does take a lot of planning, but it's not impossible, because I think your point is summer comes every year, and every parent who has their child in daycare has to think of a summer program. And what better way to get young people engaged and be that peer role model? So I think that was an example of something that just clicked and worked. And what was interesting is the kids took their April vacation to go to a week's training. And you know, everyone said they're not going to come. They came. And it was pretty amazing. But all that said, we do hire young people in our banking centers. And we've found that their knowledge in technology is something we can leverage. So we have very advanced online banking, and you know, we have ATM teller machines. And a lot of older people have a fear of technology. So we tend to leverage these young people as ambassadors in our banking centers so that they can actually provide a service that we have not been able to offer our client customers. So it's a win-win. And you could always find, I think what you always want to do is put a young person in a situation where it's positive, they feel good about ourselves, and it's not a makeup job. Because I think the pop-up idea, it's got to be, to learn, it has to be a real job. Right. And I think that's the piece. And they know the difference. I mean, young people want to work, they want to be engaged, and they don't even know yet what to dream about until you give them the opportunity. So, but all that being said, I think summer youth employment is a piece of what we need to offer young people. So the year-round connection, the mentoring is critically important. And over the next 3 years, are committing about $40 million to sort of connect the dots between those programs across the country. So it's youth employment, it's year-round connectivity to mentoring and potentially jobs. It's really helping young people stay on track. We talk about disconnected youth. These kids are connected if they have a job. Mm-hmm. And I think that can make all the difference.
We're going to come back to a discussion of these year-round connections. And if we don't do it on the panel, we expect at least one of you to ask a question that brings us back to that topic. But Anna, I wanted to turn to you. Some of what Kerry just described in terms of what was going on in that Bank of America supported in Boston in terms of the summer camp and that whole experience and connecting those dots, that's in effect that's a lot like what DC SCORE is about. So maybe you can tell us, what is DC SCORE?
Okay.
What roles you have had in DC SCORE and what you've learned and how what opportunities it has opened for you being part of DC SCORE over these years?
So DC SCORE is something that starts in elementary school in third grade towards middle school, eighth grade. It's in DC, and it deals with soccer, poetry, and service learning. I was one of those that participated in when I was in elementary school and middle school. It's a fun experience. You participate by going to soccer first, and then in elementary, basically, it's more shorter since it's too night to kids to go walk home or stuff. So usually one day they will have soccer, and then the next day they will have poetry. And then poetry was only in the fall, and service learning was in the spring. Those two seasons, they will have soccer throughout everything. They have championships. We have different, like, Fall Frenzy. We have Jamboree. Jamboree is where all of them from West Side, East Side, they have their separately, but they have their poetry, little rapping and all that. And so you can see them enjoying that too. And then service learning, they go out and try to help different organizations or try to help like the homeless or try to pick up the trash, different things they do constantly. And then in the summer, that's when I do too. There is a summer camp. There's two that's in Tubman that's only for 2 weeks. And then the rest, I'm in the one that's more longer. It's for 5 weeks. It's at Truesdale. So basically, the Truesdale one is more artistic and more soccer. We have half soccer, and then there's different people that come. Like today, the kids are going to take pictures. They have their the old cameras, and it's really interesting to see them that they're trying to see how it works. I remember them. I remember them. I still have some in the house, but So then they'll ask us where can you see the pictures and stuff, but you have to wait. So they're really like picky on them, but so we have different opportunities. And then on Fridays we go on field trips. It's fun. Even for a counselor it's fun. So what I've done in DC SCORE, so in this I ref spring and fall. I ref elementary schools, usually at Tubman. I've ref there for 4 years now, and then I coach since I graduated from Columbia Heights Educational Campus. There is a high school and a middle school, so I would just help the middle school, and that would be Lincoln. In Lincoln, I helped the girls coach, and I did theirs. I've done the poetry, and it's fun to see how they want to interact. They want to talk about their own life. And then that's what basically I do in DC SCORE. So DC SCORE have helped me a lot, starting with being a better leader, helping me to be a mentor to those little kids, and then reminding myself that I was one of those little kids, and seeing that I love to do all of these type of things and love to see them smile. And when you see them smile, you just remind yourself, like, it's something that you're helping them in. And then in the summer, when it comes in summer, you see some of them. This year is my first time having, we're having a different place of where the camp is at. And these kids, I've never seen them in my life. I've only been to the side of where Tupman, Raymond, and all those schools from the, oh, sorry, and that side. So when you see these kids now, they're like, you would never see that they're the same. They want to do the same things that other kids want to do from the other side. So, like, they, you just see them exciting. And then that just, DC Scores just brings me that kind of comforting with those kids and seeing how exciting they are. And then at the same time, you're making them change and making them what they want to be and when they grow up.
So two quick questions to follow up. One is, how old were you when you first got a paycheck from DC Scores?
So I was 14 years old. So SYEP, what usually would, we will have our own debit cards. Mm-hmm. And we had to sign up for it when we did orientation. And they would send it to us in our portal on, in the computer. And then when that happened, like 2 weeks before we get paid, they would send us a debit card that says your name. And then you can... use it as a regular debit card.
Great. Second question, how often do you speak in front of 150 people?
not as much. it's my second time being in a panel, so it's...
Terrific. Really great. Thank you.
Great job.
Mayor Nutter, I wanted to ask you, in last year, I think, when Mayor Walsh in Boston was working the phones to try to get employers engaged in the summer jobs program, yep, he decided that he really was the marketer in chief, and as much as the, as anything else. So can you talk a little bit about what it, what the role of the, of mayoral leadership and mayoral activity is in making this happen and expanding it?
The mayor of any city, any locale, and certainly Mayor Fisher is doing it, Mayor Walsh is doing it, and a number of others, the mayor has to take this on as a primary responsibility of his or her work. There's no question about it, and people need to know it. We would start our push for summer jobs usually in about November, early December. And I would always say, you know, you might think it unusual that we're having a discussion about summer jobs and it's, you know, 50 degrees outside, but you don't start this in May. And so we're going to work through the winter while we're plowing, because, you know, you really have to be able to do more than one thing at a time. So while we're plowing snow, I'm also going to be talking to you about summer jobs. And as you described, I mean, I was on the phone all the time with CEOs, chairs of companies, SVPs, EVPs, whomever I could talk to. We had phone-a-thons. We did, you know, try to do fun, different things. But, I mean, literally, like, I need five jobs. I know you did three last year. Give me three more. I know you did 50 last year. I need 10 more. And we would set goals. And, you know, last year's goal was to have at least 10,000 summer jobs. We exceeded our goal. We did a little over 10,000. Fantastic. But there were 18,000 applicants. Not good. And so, again, one of my – I rarely ever use the word frustration because I loved my job. But, I mean, it was – it's just hard feeling like, you know, you are starting back up every year on this, you know, pushing this huge rock up, that it has to become a part of the culture of your city, that this is what we do. And that expansion should not just depend on, you know, how many phone calls can the mayor make, or how many, you know, we had city council members involved, and we got a lot of people involved. And we also realize, though, that there are any number of companies. So we, so our partnership, and we did not do this work by ourselves, Philadelphia Youth Network, huge partner with us, for us, Jakima Fulmore-Townsend and her team, screening young people, talking to young people, as Carrie said. You know, you try to, you know, it's maybe you don't get the perfect job, but, you know, if you're afraid of animals, you know, we probably won't have you working in a veterinarian, the veterinary hospital or something like that. I mean, you try to get young people, you know, somewhere near their interest level. But again, maybe not a perfect match. Some employers already have their own program. Didn't necessarily want to participate with us. All right, that's fine. But you have a program, and, you know, quite honestly, we want to capture and at least count those jobs. If you participate with us, you actually get, you know, a little bit of a certificate or a certification that there is a quality issue. I would only suggest that, you know, every job is not a great job. It's what Kerry said, it's a quality job. And there's nothing wrong with filing. I mean, you know, we folks should learn how to file, but you shouldn't do it 8 hours a day. You know, making them your, you know, personal coffee go-getter, you know, is really not a job. You know, but it's nice to learn how to, you know, go get four different types of coffee, and this one likes cream and that one likes sugar. I mean, you know, there's some skill in that as well. But the mayor has to take an outsized role and communicate to the public and the business community and the foundation community, this is important. It's critically important to the overall health and vitality of the city. The one thing you mentioned, yes, the young people are making money. In many instances, they are probably not putting it away in their 401k or their tax-free portfolio. So they're spending that money, mostly probably in the community. So dollars are circulating, but they are learning something about, you know, money management. One thing I am a little nervous about, and Bank of America was fantastic in Philadelphia, but now hearing about this other program, the next time I'm in one of the facilities, I'm going to get nervous if one of the young people come up to me to help me with my ATM
right.
transaction. I'm good with that. I know how to punch the buttons. I'm all right. 10 years from now might be a different story. So mayor's got to be involved and really take it on as a serious project.
Michael, let's say it's March 1st, which came and went already.
Yes.
Let's say it were March 1st, and you're looking ahead to the summer. What are the things you want to make sure, you know, are nailed down tight for the summer? What matters the most in terms of having a successful summer, given you can't do all the things that we told you should be doing?
Yep. So Mayor Nutter hinted at something, that March 1st is kind of late in the process. And one of the challenges is a lot of people that, first of all, there aren't that many foundations in a place like Louisville that would write checks to sponsor kids to work. So I think one of the distinctions we need to make is sometimes when we're talking about summer jobs programs, we're talking about public or private money that's used to subsidize kids to work at nonprofits or in government agencies. And other times we're talking about trying to prepare kids up to a level to get them to be able to work in private sector companies. The Louisville summer job program is primarily the second, not the first. So this summer we will subsidize a couple of hundred kids, but we will help more than 2,000 kids find jobs at employer champions. And so let me go back to your question. Part of what you're trying to do is, if Mayor Fisher wants me to be working to reach out to low-income kids and to help them get jobs in the summer, and if most of those jobs are at private sector companies, I've got to prepare that kid to be able to go into a job interview and to represent himself or herself well enough to get the job, and then hopefully provide some sort of coaching, either having the company coach them or us provide coaches, so that if they have any hiccups during the summer, we're there to fix them right away. So you've got to have a budget to know that you can do it. You've got to be making sure those people that are staffing it are organized. You have to have a soft skills preparation effort. And part of the challenge many cities face, so when the mayor was new in 2011, we raised enough money to subsidize 200 kids to work. And at that scale, you could do that with a couple of staff people. But when you start to talk about trying to help thousands of kids, now you're starting to rely on partners. People in different schools in the school district, people at the Louisville Urban League, people at church and faith-based places that want to help kids. Now I'm in the standardization business. Okay, now I've gone from helping to prepare 200 kids, which I can basically do through the programs I control, yeah, right, to trying to prepare thousands of kids. Now we're talking about, what's the curriculum? How do I know whether your program meets the standard or not? That's a very different kind of effort to be running. And it needs resources to be able to do it well. But oftentimes we're doing it with skeleton crews, right, because you're trying to save as much money as you can to subsidize the kids who otherwise aren't going to work. and yet you're also trying to get to a scale. So by March 1st, you're hoping that you've got a technology platform like Martha described, because I can't do one-on-one job matching with 2,000 kids, mm-hmm. right? So I've got to have some way of referring them and preparing them. I've got to have some way of making sure that they're already getting soft skills training, and if they're not, that I've got it planned and it's happening through a network of partners. And then what I'm hoping is I've got lots of private sector companies that are lining up to say, yes, here's what I need. Right. Here's my job description. So if someone is interested in the job, they can see the job description and figure out whether it's a match or not without me physically having to have a staff person do that job matching. Does that make sense?
Richard, yeah. The one thing I would add to that, if it's March 1st, I mean, I'm bearing down on my folks, and I'm getting weekly reports at that point. Yeah. How many jobs have we lined up? How many jobs have we lined up? How many jobs have we lined up? And they know that question is coming.
I get the same thing from Mayor Fisher every week. Starting around March, you're giving them that weekly report. That's exactly right.
We're not playing around here.
Right.
So I want to switch. We've been talking a lot about kind of from the perspective of the city-run program. But, Carrie, I want to ask you to talk a little bit from the perspective of the employer community. What works, what doesn't work in terms of outreach to private employers to get them thinking about either getting involved or expanding their involvement?
So I would say from an employer mindset, we know, and this is largely because of your great research, there's about 17% of young people are not employed. That's a pretty high unemployment rate. And as a corporate entity, we're an employer, but we want to make money. There's a whole host of things going on. But from a purely economic standpoint, we need to build the workforce of tomorrow. And if the unemployment rate for youth is so low, so big, we've got to fill the gap. So that's like a driving factor. I think the other piece is we also want to make sure that communities thrive. So people need to work. People need to learn about the workforce. They need to be inspired. We all were inspired by our first job. Imagine, your first job. I was amazed they were paying me. I was like, this is unbelievable. I'm getting paid. But anyway, so young people, I think, really need to sort of have that lift, and I think we owe it to them. But I don't think a summer job is going to do it alone. So I think from an employer's standpoint, we're looking at keeping kids on track. I mean, the worst thing, I think, for any community is to have young people disconnected out of school and out of work. That's a recipe for disaster. And quite frankly, we need to give them hope. And I think by providing employment and mentoring opportunities and enrichment programs and alternative pathways for young people who are, almost at the point of saying, forget it, I don't understand why I'm in school, I think we need to really think about, connecting young people to opportunities that make sense. And we do a lot, year round. But I want to spend just a minute on why I'm in D.C. besides being here. Mm-hmm. Is that we've got about 220 high school students from around the country. So right now we probably in the summer employ about 15 provide employment for about 1,500 young people in 30-35. Markets across the U.S. But we do have a program that we run that's called the Student Leaders Program. And these are young people, largely from low-income backgrounds, not solely. But these young people are actively engaged in their community in service. But we provide them with an 8-week paid internship. And I say this because we call it an internship because it's not just a job. It is about investing in their future. And we provide financial education so they have better money habits. We provide mentorship. We connect them to executives in the bank. But they're paid for 8 weeks, and they're 5 from each market. We bring them into D.C. for a summit. So there's 220 kids at the Renaissance Hotel here from across the country. But for many of these young people, they've never been to D.C. before. They learn how government works. They visit the Hill. They talk to nonprofit leaders, leaders from the business community. In fact, Brian Moynihan came and met with them, who's our CEO. They talk with really inspirational speakers. Wes Moore is talking to them this afternoon. And the whole point, I think, for them is that they may not have a role model, but they have to see themselves as being in our seats. And I think we have to inspire young people. And so programs that reach out and really
provide leadership development. They are going to be our future leaders, and they have a voice. So we spend a lot of time talking to young people about finding that voice. So the work that we do with young people and provide them opportunities to work in nonprofits, we really frame it as an opportunity to know your community, help your community, build a resume, and really appeal to their idea of service as well as employment. So I think there's a whole host of things that we can do to help young people aspire to do more. And a job can be a catalyst, but I think there's so much more. And, this whole idea of providing a pathway to success, it's going to be different for every young person. But we need to be there. You know, some young people, traditional school may not have worked, so there are opportunities, for alternative pathways with organizations like a Year Up. Or if a young person needs to be engaged full-time, there's organizations here in D.C. like Urban Alliance that will help a young person get a part-time job during the year. But I think we need to teach young people how to present themselves, how to aspire, because they have talent. It's just they're not connected to, they don't have a network, so we need to provide that network. So I don't know, we're really looking holistically at pathways for young people, and it's a big strategy. And to your point about planning, we know we're going to spend a hunk of change on summer jobs every year, and we work with our markets and make sure that they're engaged with the mayor's programs, know who's the best player in the city, and bring our volunteers as mentors. So I think it's something that we're passionate about, and it's good for our company, quite frankly, because they will be our future workforce. And if we don't teach young people these skills, and if unemployment for young people continues to be at that level, we're going to have a problem. We have to be competitive.
I just wanted to add one thing about the March 1st thing that I'm hoping I will be able to say March 1st next year. And it has a little bit to do with the way you frame the summer jobs thing, too. So far, we're mostly framing this around a deficit thing. Kids are coming from poor backgrounds, and we need to get them to a standard so that we can get them into a job. But Louisville and lots of other cities have seen their high schools move to career themes where oftentimes kids are earning industry-recognized credentials in high school. Right. And we scrambled this year to try to market some of the high school kids in our program based on skills and certifications they were bringing. Right. But we are going to make a major push to be doing that by March 1st of next year because we have health career-themed high schools. Right. We have ones that have banking and exposure to finance. We have kids earning manufacturing or construction credentials. And so over time, part of what's a challenge about this, and the paper you all wrote really highlights this, is you're trying to knit together different systems to try to make it work so it's not just a 6 or 7 week summer program. But if I can take a kid that's earning a CNA and get them to work at Norton Healthcare or Baptist Healthcare during the summer, all of a sudden you're now both doing something of value to the company, right, and something of value to the kid. So I just wanted to mention that as a March 1st next year thing.
Well, that's why the digital badges concept is so, so very important. First of all, the young people should not be running all over the place trying to fill out this form, that form, the other form. Should have either on a thumb drive or, almost like your personal health records where you've got a password, et cetera, et cetera. All the young people can figure that out. Here's all my stuff. Here are the things that I've done. Here are the certificates that I have. Here are the programs that I participated in. This is who I am. Right, and make that presentation, and not make it a hassle to try to move on with their lives.
Before we open it up to questions, I want to ask Anna one more set of questions. Do you have a number of friends who have also had summer jobs through summer youth employment? Not all in DC scores, right?
No, different.
So you have a sense of like from them what works, what doesn't work, what was a bad experience, what was a great experience. Anything, like if you could wave your magic wand and say to the folks at the District of Columbia, anyone here that this is relevant to, here's some things that would make a difference to young people when they're in these programs. Here's what we really need and what really mattered to you. Any advice? Now's your chance.
What I can say that mentoring is actually a lot that we need, I have DC scores. A lot of people do not have other persons to have a year round of helping, like preparing them to summer, saying that we're ready to be a counselor. And some people just, when we start planning to apply, like turn in our papers and everything, we start in January. We have to sign in and everything. And so then that means that we already know what's going to expect to us. I know that some of my friends, they know until like a week before where they're going to work at.
Mm-hmm.
And that too, like they don't know what to expect. They call their, the supervisor calls them in before like 2 weeks to tell them to come in. So a meeting to know each other, but really you're just meeting them. You're just working. It's nothing like, you don't have that person to say, I can come back to you because we had a month, I guess, or a year together to know who we are.
Mm-hmm.
So when mentoring comes down, like other places like LOYC and Mary Center, they have those type of, they have a whole year around having those youth, like they're ready to go in the summer to work. Morning through afternoon, they are getting paid. And so I've seen that's a lot that we need mentoring, someone to be there for them. So that networking happens and stuff, mm-hmm. because there's a point that you're going to go into the real world. This is just a program. And then little by little, you're just, going to go to the real world. It's like you're not going to stay here forever. So, like, you know that you have to start applying. You're going to college. You need money. You're not going to get money only in the summer, you know, especially if you're going to stay close to your family.
Yeah. I was going to pick up. I think you said this word network.
Yeah.
That's what we're offering young people by that first mm-hmm. job. It's, you know, early employment, summer employment. It's a window into a network. And that's the access piece, and that's why I think it's so critically important. And I just wanted to, because you used that word, and I had just written it down. Network, she's right.
Yeah, I've seen all of that. Like, I recently just applied to Chipotle, actually, like, around, I guess, November. I wanted to work for just Saturdays and Sundays because I go to school. I wanted to focus on school. It's my last year. I wanted to focus on applying to colleges and getting scholarships. So when me applying to this, I did an interview and everything. DC Scores have helped me in that, how to come up to them and present myself and give a, you know, a strong handshake, smile, show your teeth. And so that I, like, some people don't have that type of, like, experience. Like, I know what I'm going to go to. Like, when they open that door, I know how I'm going to react to it. So that, too. Unfortunately, I didn't get the job, but... it's just that experience, too, we need. Some kids that they just want to see the money, but they don't really want to focus in school. I mean, you can work the whole time of your life, but you still now you need education. Like,
yeah.
And then that's who you have to focus a lot in.
Well, what you're saying is so consistent with what everyone on the panel is saying. It's
probably a Chipotle manager somewhere. Crawling under
should
a chair.
Should be kicking herself.
Crawling in a chair right now. Who didn't hire her? You're fired.
Turn our attention out to those of you who have been listening and gathering up steam for questions. When you ask a question, two things. Say who you are, where you're from, and try to keep it short.
Thank you. I'm Kimberly Hay from the National Governors Association. Thank you all. I really appreciated the presentations. My question is, so you all mentioned about how summer job programs are not meant to be a one-time solution to anything, and they're meant to be connected to many other efforts. I was wondering how you connect to your state resources and state opportunities for assisting youth. I'm thinking especially of the Workforce Investment and Opportunity Act and its emphasis on services to in-school and out-of-school youth. And so I'm just curious whether you work with the state.
So the answer is yes. We had a system in Philadelphia that was, before whatever the newest iteration of all this is and all the acronyms, but there was the WIA and the WIB and, you know, whoever designed that
should probably kind now,
never
maybe.
Get another job in any government in the United States of America. But and there are two separate boards and all of that madness. Well, we decided, because we like to take on big, challenging issues, we combined them. And then we created what we called No Wrong Door. Because the people who are coming in the door, they don't need to become experts in the WIA Act, or whatever it is now called. They want a job. For the rest of us, behind those desks, behind those doors, in all those places, to kind of figure out, this is who this person is, this is what they qualify for, this acts as this acts as that, often in conflict with each other, but that's a whole other story, and defeating the whole purpose of trying to get someone a job. But we took that on, combined, and I took it very, very seriously. In that regard, and actually later in my tenure, put myself on the Philly Works Board to, again, drive another signal of how serious we were taking this. I think the consistency here is, and my expectation was, that young people would return. So I've been wanting to do this for a long time, and with every respect to B of A, and I won't give the name, you know, there's ads we see on TV, and they say, you know, what's in your wallet? Right? So what I carry in my wallet is the business card of a young guy whose name is Rashawn Hall. Rashawn came to my office. He was from Cristo Rey High School. He just graduated this year. I made a commitment. It was a new school in Philadelphia at the time. I made a commitment that four of their students would always have an internship in the mayor's office. Sat with my staff. We designed a whole curriculum. They rotated through a number of offices. I asked Rashawn last year, you know, what have you been up to? What are you doing? He hands me his business card, class of 2016, has his email address. But what's really important is, on the back, it says work experience. Freshman job, Mayor's Office of Philadelphia. Sophomore job, Mayor's Office of Philadelphia. Junior job, Campus Crest. Senior job, J.G. Wentworth. Mm-hmm. To present this card and show someone, this is what I've been doing with myself. This is who I am. And so our expectation is that every young person should be able to do the same thing. And it's consistent across the city of Philadelphia, and every city in America should be looking to give that young person a four-year window into their time in high school.
I want to just follow up on the question also as a sort of a practitioner. There's a saying that I've learned this year that sometimes we're trying to put 80 pounds of beans into a 40-pound sack. And that is the fundamental truth of what's happening with the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. So if you go back and look at the amount that the federal government used to spend on workforce development, broadly defined, in the early 1970s, in today's dollars, it was around $20 billion. Today it's around $3.5 billion and shrinking. And so, yes, in a city like Louisville, where we have roughly 10,000 opportunity youth, so luckily not 50,000, right, we target the $1.5 million that we get from the federal government on those young people to target it on kids that are opportunity youth, mostly young people that dropped out of high school or didn't successfully transition from high school. But the idea that we can also take that same tiny little funding stream and now morph it into something that would be a bridge to a big summer job program that would serve thousands of people just isn't a realistic idea based on current funding levels. It's one of the reasons why I'm so encouraged that Brookings is trying to lead the charge around getting the federal government to reengage in this subject and to invest in this specifically, because the point I'm trying to make is I think there are things that state fund, you know, so the high school system in Louisville that's organizing around career academies and career themes has the potential to be a great hook into this and a great partner with us, and not just in Louisville, but in my regional counties as well, But I think we have to be careful not to try to think that that small federal funding stream, which is being tugged on in lots of different directions, and as it got rewritten a couple years ago, named a whole bunch of more things that it wanted us to do with the same funding stream.
Right?
And oh, by the way, it's a great thing. Congress actually passed something, so we want to give them a shout out for that. Right? It passed overwhelmingly in a bipartisan way. But the frustration for people that are practitioners, for me, is in the first year after that, Congress funded it at the full level. This year, there are now people in Congress who are trying to gut it, or trying to cut it by 10 or 20%. So you're constantly trying to get them to just do what they said they were going to do, much less to try to deal with the more beans that they named that they didn't give us funding to try to deal with. So not to complain, but just to say there is a funding issue here that we have to acknowledge, and if we don't acknowledge it, if we keep pretending this thing that we passed called WIOA can solve all the world's workforce problems, it's just not big enough to do it.
Right.
I saw a question back there first, so yes, on the edge there, on the end. We'll come back around.
Need you to...
Is that working?
So we just launched our first career-focused internship program, and we have 70-plus first-time employers, and I was wondering... You know, what are your most effective methods for retaining those employers after, you know, working with them for the first time?
Good question.
I mean, I think feedback, first say thank you about a million times. toward the tail end of the summer, beginning of the fall, we always had a breakfast inviting the employers. We had, you know, some that were... you know, went above and beyond, or they were stars or whatever, they got, you know, certainly additional recognition. But, you know, a lot of it is just you need to give feedback. You know, was this worthwhile? Did it work? How many kids, you know, got jobs? What were their experiences? And, I mean, again, I'll kind of go back to something that was mentioned earlier. Yes, as adults, we have this unique opportunity in that moment to maybe get kids to listen to us. But, again, you know, the conversation always has to be both ways. And when I would talk to my folks, they would tell me how much they learned from the young people, and then how much information we could glean from them about, you know, adults designing things for kids. You know, as much as we think we're, you know, the responsible ones, that can't be a one-way street. It really has to be two. That feedback loop has to keep going around. What we thought was interesting when we were kids...
Back when cameras were still
right?
Making us feel bad.
You know, I've lived long enough that Polaroids are back.
Yeah.
And the young people think that's new. My grandmother bought one of those. Okay. So, you know, so what was exciting and interesting for us may not even exist anymore. So we really we need to listen more about what young people want and then use our limited dollars and resources to design things in that way. So I believe in a full feedback loop and encouraging those employers, thanking those employers, and then what I would always say is, thank you so much for those 50 jobs. You know I'm calling you in 4 months because next year I want 60. But thank you very much.
You know, I would add one thing to that because I do think the managers of the young students who are coming in for summer jobs or whatever kind of job, I think we need, and I found this at this company, the more we enlighten them on the students that are coming in and making sure that they're interested in spending some extra time, because you know, anyone on a first-time job needs extra time, and if you're putting five kids in one department, you want to make sure that manager is trained. So maybe sharing best practices with companies on how to make a smooth transition for your students would be a great idea. So not every manager is cut out for this, and that we have learned that. And there's some managers that, you know, seek it out. So you want the folks that raise their hands.
Yeah, right? I mean, we did kind of summer job program, almost like summer jobs in a box.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it does take a lot on the employer side. There's no question about it. To put one of these things together, and you know, it's maybe fun the first week, and then you realize, I got all these kids for another 6, 7, 8 weeks. I can get through a week of fun and activity, but, you know, by week 4, you know, it might be a little draining.
And long-term employers are really hoping to develop a really diverse workforce. So all of these young people that are coming in with new ideas, and it's actually exciting for a lot of companies. I mean, it's a good thing.
Well, and I love the reference to being in a box. I just wanted to give a shout-out to Boston and Neil Sullivan and Mayor Walsh's people. When the mayor, Mayor Fisher, really wanted to make this commitment in 2011, Neil was the first person that I called. Boston runs one of the best programs in the country. Yep. And Martha made this reference to a work-based learning plan that they let us basically borrow, steal, and use for our own. And it gives you an ability to talk to the employer supervisor about what your expectations are for that employer. So part of the way to answer the question is employers need to know what they actually signed up for, and that helps to coach them on what you're hoping they'll do with a young person that turns it into a quality experience so that they know what your expectations are and you're meeting them. So that's at least one thing to look at.
We have a Twitter question, so we know that one will be short.
This question comes from Katie Martin. How can cities better measure what works and what doesn't work when spending tax dollars on summer jobs programs?
Well, so let me just say a couple things. So I hinted at this, and Martha's report with Richard obviously hints that we need to do more of this kind of research. But I think part of what you're trying to do, we collect Social Security numbers on all these kids that are in the program. You can run their wage data through the UI wage database over time and look longitudinally at do they end up working more than kids that weren't in the program. We now have a P through 16 data set at the state level, so we were able to do research to see did the kids in our program go on to higher education at a different and better rate than young people that weren't in the program, right? So those are the things that you want to start trying to look at, because we do this because we think kids are going to go on to work, go on to school, and do better in life. But again, we have to be modest in our expectations if all we're doing is a six-week program, but the more that program links to other things, the more you want to try to track and measure those things over time. So,
Dr. Sarah Heller did the evaluation of some programs in Chicago, subsequently moved to Philadelphia. She's out of the University of Pennsylvania. I called her on the phone one day. She was slightly flabbergasted, and understand why the mayor was calling her. It wasn't like a person was calling on my behalf. It was me. Like, I just got here. What, you know, what could you possibly be calling me? I read about your work. I'd like to meet you. And then asked her, begged her, to study the program in Philadelphia, which is going on right now. It started with a pilot last year, full-blown study now. MIT is helping to fund part of that study with a demonstration grant. At the end of the day, it's about data, it's about evidence, but it's also, and again, this has to come from the mayor. When the economic recession hit, I was already in office, you reach a point where you have to evaluate every program and activity that you're doing. And you know as well as I do, there are some folks out there who may have been, you know, getting grants and financial support from your government for a long, long period of time. I mean, it's just like, you know, as fall follows summer or whichever way you want to go with that. And in reality, may not be having that much of an impact. We called all of our program providers in and started asking questions. How many people you serve? What's the evidence? What are the outcomes, et cetera, et cetera? And unfortunately, we had to stop funding some programs. A, we couldn't afford it. B, they weren't doing what they said they were going to do. And C, I had to deliver the message, we can't afford the nostalgia of funding your program anymore because it's not producing the kind of outcomes that we need. You have to do that, unfortunately. Fund what works, figure out what that is, and then scale it up as much as you can. We have to get beyond pilots, pilot programs, and the like. If we know something works, pay for it.
We have time for one more question behind Andy.
Probably going to end up with two. Yeah.
Do you have a
one-on-one? All right.
All right. And my question is, however, I did have sister who applied but never got selected. Approved the selection process, because as you guys on the panel, you guys mentioned having jobs to offer, but then there comes another problem with the selection process.
Good question.
Well, I don't know anything about the New York program, so I don't know why your sister didn't get selected. But I think it may just end up being, unfortunately, some days it's a numbers game.
Yeah.
And like I said, slightly more than 10,000 kids got picked. I am sure there are some siblings or friends who did not, who were in the 8,000 who didn't. And so, again, barring some, massive issue with the selection process, some days it's just, this is the amount of money we have, it funds that many slots, this is the number of kids that get one, and unfortunately, somebody's on one side of that line, somebody's on the other side. This is mostly a resource issue. And probably has virtually nothing to do with your sister or her application or anything else.
But it speaks to the need. We don't have enough jobs to meet kids that want them. Yeah.
Thank you.
We are going to shift gears now and have some closing comments from Allison Gerber, who's the senior associate at the Annie Casey Foundation. We're all going to stay up here in case you're curious.
Okay.
And Allison is going to come up here. I'd like to... I'd like you all to thank the panelists. I thought this was a great presentation.
I promise I'll be fast. I'll keep you safe. So, good morning. My name is Allison Gerber, and I'm a program officer with the Annie E. Casey Foundation, where I work on employment-related strategies. For those of you who don't know anything about Casey, we're a private philanthropy whose mission is to create a brighter future for the nation's children by developing solutions to strengthen families, build paths to economic opportunity, and transform struggling communities. So why employment? Simply put, employment is the primary means for which most Americans earn income, and income is the way that we stabilize our families and our communities. And so I just wanted to say a couple words today about the foundation's interest in summer jobs, or as I tend to call them as a District of Columbia resident, summer youth employment programming. So my perspective on summer youth employment has really changed over the years. And for those of you who know me, I tend to be a skeptical, somewhat critical person. And so for me to go from a place of sort of criticism of summer youth employment to an investor in strategies that support summer youth employment, I think that that says a lot about, what I've really seen as the promise of this work. And so just wanted to share, a little bit about my journey in hopes that it helps us better understand some of the arguments for and against this work. So I'm somebody who started in workforce development really in the sector strategies place, thinking about, deep partnerships with business, longer-term engagements and skill building, really robust wraparound supports. That, to me, was everything I understood about what good workforce development looked like. And the truth is the concept of a very short-term experience that matches youth with an employer is based on limited knowledge about that job and about the skills and interests of the young person that provides a, sometimes limited or no link to educational opportunities that are structured, that sometimes does not provide wraparound services or for which we know relatively little about the outcome measures is almost the exact opposite of what I understood to be a good workforce development program. So that would be my primary criticism. But I will say, my journey kind of in changing started when I worked for Mayor Gray here in the District of Columbia. I will say I was not in any way responsible for the summer youth employment programming in that job. But I did get a little window into this logistical challenge that folks have brought up and what it sort of means. What I could definitely see every year was the line that would wrap around the building with young people and their parents who would stand in line to come in and get their name in the system for a summer youth employment programming. And what I know about young people is you don't stand in line for things that you don't want. it's like the first clue that something of value is happening there and that we really need to pay attention to what that value is. I would also say that because we do a scale of summer youth employment here in the district, as the WIB director, we did host young people in our office. I would say we probably were not the best hosts of the young people in our office. They did a lot of the things that Mayor Nutter said we shouldn't have them doing, a lot of filing, a lot of sitting at the computer. I would like to believe that window into government helped a couple young people kind of become, future leaders, but I'm not sure we did a good job of that. And we probably could have done a lot better. So fast forward to my current job, I was kind of, you know, a little on the fence about summer youth employment. I'd seen some of the good, but I've also seen some of the ways that we missed the mark. And it was really my job when I came to KC 2.5 years ago to design a new employment initiative targeting young adults for the foundation. I'd be honest, summer youth employment was not high on my list of sort of interventions that we would be investing in. I really wanted to design something that looked more like those sector strategies that deeply engaged employers, that contributed to the long-term labor market success for young people who made long-term investments in their skill building and supportive services. But the truth is part of the job of a least decent program officer is to question your biases and to force yourself to really hear folks out and to better understand what is the experience of folks out there in the field. And what I found was sort of related, two things related to summer youth employment, that there are many, many, many places in this country where they were thinking about how summer youth employment could be integrated into a more seamless set of opportunities for young people, that there was this knowledge of an asset that we were already investing in some cases, in some cities, somewhat significantly in terms of dollars, and that was a place to build on. And then there were a few places, and some of them really came out in the research that Martha did, where they were using it as a platform for innovation, where they truly understood that summer youth employment was one time in the year in which they could grab a hold of 5,000, 9,000, 20,000 young people, and that there was some opportunity to use it to assess and triage and to link to other opportunities. And so that sort of ongoing sort of researchy internal foundation listening tour was happening. On April 27, 2015, when I was on a site visit in St. Louis, Missouri, where we were learning a lot more about the pipelines for young people that were being developed there in the wake of the Ferguson riots. And we were sitting on the tarmac due to a rain delay when what were peaceful protests in Baltimore soon became civil unrest. And I was there with my colleagues, many of whom are parents of young people who are in middle school, who are in high school, who live in Baltimore. And it was so clear to all of us that what our young people were telling us in that moment in time is that we were not doing enough to make sure that they were a part of the fabric of our communities and our economies. And so it became, you know, we are deep investors in Baltimore in the KC Foundation. We are hometown philanthropists. It's very different than the national grant-making role that I play. We're local political actors, you know, and we have to really reflect in that moment and say, like, have we done enough for Baltimore? Our young people are really telling us this, and what should be our response? And a good part of our response was summer youth employment. And so I think that was the moment that really changed how I thought about the role of summer youth employment in building brighter futures for our young people. You know, summer youth employment was the answer in response, or the beginning of an answer, for a number of reasons. You know, one is that there was this research that had been done out of Chicago around lessening justice system involvement for young people. And, you know, we can say that that's not really an employment outcome, but in fact it really is. It is an employment interrupter for sure, right? And something that we have to be, you know, really cognizant of. It also was, we spent a lot of time engaging in youth voice and in community voice, and it was a clear thing very quickly that families and young people were asking for that we could, in fact, deliver. And it was something that local leadership in Baltimore felt that, you know, they had the ability to do, that we could double the number of youth that we were serving. Even though we had that skeleton crew, it was a place of strength from which to build. And we needed to build and build quickly on those places of strength. You know, in total, that experience has made it clear to me how valuable summer youth employment can be in the lives of young people. You know, through that narrow window of time, we touch thousands of lives on a daily basis and in a way that we don't otherwise touch them through the public schools or other human service programs. In a way that appeals to young people and makes them a part of the place where many of us as adults spend a lot of our lives, the workplace, and where if you're lucky and you're like me, you really enjoy a part of your life. But, you know, I think that we also fundamentally understood that it was not enough, right? That the answer to what was happening in Baltimore would not solely be summer youth employment. So in addition to those investments, you know, what I could bring as a part of the national team was, in fact, the resource that was Brookings to our local team. And to say, what would it take to understand what the best of summer youth employment looks like? What would it take to see summer youth employment as a platform, as a point in time, but to do more? as a way to connect young people to other education and employment opportunities, to do successive stackable job opportunities over time, to expose more young people to employers, but also expose more employers to the resource and the value that is our young people. So I really couldn't be more pleased about how this paper has come off and feel that it just has so much to contribute to the field and the field of practice. And I think that contribution stands next to other work that's happening in JP Morgan Chase and Bank of America and Citi, and that begins to help us understand sort of, what we have to do. And I just, want to kind of sum up that, bottom line today, I'm of the belief that summer youth employment is important, but it's not enough. For a young person with a strong relationship to caring adults, with a rich academic life whose basic needs are met, youth employment as a standalone entity is an appropriate intervention to slot into their lives. But for a young person who has maybe limited knowledge about the world of work, isn't yet connected to a mentor, might be struggling in school or isn't making that connection between school and the rest of living, or for whom is experiencing violence or trauma or basic needs going unmet, summer youth employment is a snapshot in time through which we can connect them, and we need to grab onto that moment, and we need to hold them, and we need to bring them in, and we need to figure out what else that we can wrap around them, because that's the way that we're going to start to make our young people feel like they are a fabric of our community and like they are a part of the fabric of our workforce. And so, not that we have a sense of how we'll do that at KC. We are struggling every day to figure out what our continued investments are in the youth and young adult space, but I feel that this is part of the struggle, and it is the right struggle. So thank you for letting me share that today. Thank you to Brookings for letting us say a few words. I appreciate your time and attention.
Thank you all. That's the end of the formal part of the program. We'll be up here for a few minutes.